Morning, everybody. Gloria, compulsive overeater from Sydney, Australia. This year I went to the World Service Business Conference in Albuquerque, and I suppose why I'm just mentioning that, I was looking at some of the resumes of those putting in for trustees positions, and it was just overwhelming the amount of work they do. It was overwhelming the amount of work they do. And I'd been thinking to myself, I do an awful lot. And I was talking about this to somebody, and he said it in such a voice that it almost makes me cry to recall it. He said, "Can you ever give enough? Like, can you ever give enough back to this amazing fellowship that actually gives you a life? What was killing us is now the fellowship keeping us alive." So, yes, I've been in the program for quite a while. I've been at, neutral round food for a long while as well. So, I'm in that where I'm having a lot of my character defects really dug out, which is quite painful. I was quite happy to have the initial ones dug out because or disappear because I realized a lot of you could see them. I was okay with those. I was really happy to let go of anything people could see, but I wasn't too happy about the other ones that gave me great comfort. Look, before I got into OA, I was a dieter. So, I came in around 50, so I was well and truly, well and truly in that kind of way of life. In fact, when I came in, I didn't have any idea that there could be any other way. And I can remember there's the last sentence in step one in the 12 and 12 that says, "Before we found our way, every diet or period of control was followed by a period of uncontrolled eating." I mean, wow. I'd been doing something for 50 years and still thought I was coming into OA to do the same thing and never connecting the two. I never connected that every time I went into that phase, I'd come out the other side. And I remember early in the piece saying to me, "Gloria, you know what you do? Have you ever assessed if it works?" And I was so mad that here I am about a pound away from morbid obesity, and I'm kind of thinking, well, I don't know, like maybe if I go on another diet and find another food plan, well, it'll work, like it never has, but maybe. So, that kind of black and white, this is the way it is. And yeah, I'm obsessive. And I'm still obsessive today. One of my issues was though, I came out of, I belonged to the healing ministry of St. Andrew's Cathedral in Sydney, and I'd been there for quite a number of years. So a big question for me was, what the hell am I doing in this place? What the hell am I doing in this place? And why could I not get it in the church? Like, why do I have to be here? So I had a few spiritual awakenings as to, I'm here because I have a disease and God's provided a way through for me. It was that simple. And the other thing that really helped me was, and I come out of a Christian background. So, and I'm not, that's just my story. I could see the Beatitudes shining through in those 12 steps. So, once I kind of got hold of that, I was here to stay. So that was some of the questions, why am I here? And I've kind of stayed ever since. I kind of knew that this is where I had a problem. I think some of the things that really helped me was because I'm extremely practical. You can give me great theories, but I want to know what does that look like? Okay, so you say I've got a disease. So what does that look like in practical terms? What does that look like? Okay, so when you sit down to have a meal and it's a normal average meal. When you get up, what do you do? What do you see everybody else doing? Oh, they go into the family room or they go and talk. But what do? You go out and you finish everything on everybody else's plate. Then you go to the fridge. Then you go to the pan. You're just starting. You're just on the way now. So that kind of scavenging that, and somebody put it well. They said, "So you are hungrier at the end of it than you were at the beginning." Yep. That's me. I start to eat certain food and away I go, and I don't know when I'm going to finish. And the other thing that really sold me on the realization that I was here for the long haul was when I suddenly, and it was quite scary actually, you know, that thinking thing. Like I can't, when I realized I couldn't think my way out of this. And I'll just give you an example. You know, the Easter egg thing. I go and buy the Easter eggs, come home, and I put a lot of time into it. I have six grandchildren, and you know, they like, one's pink, one's blue, one's white. Like, so, you know, a lot of thought put into that. I come home and I eat them. And there's no thought between, I don't think while I'm eating them, but these were for the kids. You're going to have to go back and get more. It's going to cost you more. Not a thought. When I go into that mode, that's where I am. You know, there's no connection. And I liken that to, you know, the rules of the road. Like, we know the rules of the road, and sometimes I break them. You know, okay, there's a spot there and I think I could jaywalk across there, but my mind is never out of, I'm not unconscious at this point. If I'm going across a road, I do not forget the rules of the road, and I don't minimize the risk. I am awake and I'm ready to roll. But why am I not like that around food? Why do I, am I so miserable being so overweight and then eating the stuff that I can't? Yeah, like I just suddenly realized that if I kept jumping into the traffic, you'd say I was insane. You know, you'd come down to probably see me at the hospital a few times, but at the end of the day, you'd say, forget her. She needs to be in a psychiatric hospital, you know, but I do this. I just kept doing the same thing over and over again. Okay, so one of the things that, one of the wonderful things that happened for me when I first came in, I just started to lose weight. And I actually think I saw the steps on the wall and realized that they would mean I had to do something. So I just ignore them because I'm, you know, I want to wake up in the morning and it's all gone. So all I was doing was going to meetings. And they kind of left me alone, I think, because I was a bit older than the young gang that were there. So I just went to meetings. I loved it. I loved listening to what they were saying. There was that real feel of camaraderie. And then I was at a workshop, and this older member came up to me and said, "You need to do step four." And I said, "But I haven't done the first three." She said, "Yes, you have. Yes, you have. And if you stop the steps, you'll start putting on weight." You know, like the magic word, you'll start putting on weight. I mean, there was no great spiritual awakening to doing the step four. It was just, you know, you're going to get fat if you don't do this. So that's how I came to do my first step four. I sat down one Saturday and thought, this is ridiculous. I don't resent anybody. And then away I went with all the resentments. I did it in a morning. And then I spent the next 10 months, and this is, I think a few of you relate to this. I then spent the next 10 months having a look at what everybody else did, and somebody did it with a psychologist and somebody did it with a priest and blah, blah, blah. Well, I mustn't have done it. And I needed this wonderful sponsor to say, you know, the idea of doing that, what you hope to get out of it, don't you have it? So let's move on. I am one of those people that constantly needs to be told, you know, move on, move on. I had a wonderful sponsor who was a male at some stage, and he was very short. I'd give him this great emotional spiel about where I was at, and it was online. It was an overseas sponsor, and he'd say, "Okay, carry on." And that's all I get after I told him this amazingly wonderful story about my difficulties. Another one was I had a difficult relationship with my younger daughter. And so he wanted me to read out of the big book, you know, that story about Max, how the husband ends up not liking her and ended up hating her and all the rest of it. He wanted me to read that every day and also write down three things that my daughter was good at. So the next day I emailed him back and I said, "I can't think of anything." So he said, "Try harder." You know, he never let me get away with my My emotional sensitivity or whatever. But one of the things that was very helpful and is helpful as I've gone on in the program is writing out your story, your history around food and the behaviors. I found it more interesting now than I did in the beginning. It was very useful because, as my sponsor said to me, it's going to give you some idea as to where you're going to go in recovery. Okay, so you don't eat breakfast, so you don't eat regularly. You are obsessed about particular foods, so you're probably going to have to eat a variety. You're going to have to sit down at a table. If you're eating something walking out the door, no, thank you. That's not going to count. That's not part of the way you go. You're going to sit at a table where possible. You're going to eat a variety of food. You're going to eat 3 times a day, and don't buy food for other people. I was kind of a mother, grandmother at this point, and I'm very good at buying food for other people and then eating it. So that was where I went with that. I found that extremely useful because, like when you've been doing something for a long time, what's it going to look like? Like you're going to go through that door, and what's it going to look like? So that was helpful for me. Where it's helpful now is that in relation, I'm a bit ashamed, not that ashamed, that really food was probably the closest thing to love that I could say, that had the attributes of love, like attention, exclusivity, wanting that above all else, putting myself out for it. That was around food. And what I found was that I do that in relationships. I become obsessive, possessive. And I want them all to myself. Like it was very, very handy having a look at the way in which I relate to people. It was really handy in seeing, she seems to be getting a bit, or he seems to be getting a bit sick of me or whatever. And I'd think, yeah, you're obsessive again, Gloria. He has a life too. He has a life too, and it's not your life. So that was very helpful. Look, the other thing is, it says it in step two. I think I come back to steps one, two, and three every day, because I think I'm God. I wake up in the morning and I'm going to fix something or somebody. It's just the way it is. I'm a servant, but I don't want to be. I want to be in charge. So, coming back to that steps one, two, and three, and the thing that gets me out of the quickest is to find, it says in step two, God's healing power. The compulsive overeating is in the community of OA. So when I'm reaching out to somebody, I might like you, I might not, but I'm looking for what you've got inside of you. You're carrying recovery, you're carrying the power. And on a daily basis, I think that's how I'm happy, joyous, and free. I've got the God on the mountain, but I need the God in the marketplace. I need you guys. And it's disappointing that I need you, but I do, and it's the quickest way for me to get out of it. And having said that, it's not easy to start reaching out because I hide, and I think that's the nature of us compulsive overeaters. We're always looking for somewhere to hide. I went to conference and I wasn't comfortable there till they gave me a job. Once they gave me a job, off I went like a pig in mud. I was as happy, comfortable. So service is another thing I hide in. Like I can hide in anything. I'll finish on this, Ross. We're doing a lot of Zoom meetings, and I'm doing a lot of Zoom meetings because the newcomer seems to be at Zoom meetings. And we've come up with what we call social gatherings. So we have 3 a month. One we meet up at the beach, another one we meet in the city, and another one we meet in the suburbs. But the other thing that I've noticed is that I can hide in who I think I am or a role I have. And when I go to the beach and I sit amongst everybody, I'm just another bozo on the bus. And I didn't, like I always would have said that about myself. But here I'm seeing another level of, you just sit back and they're all doing this and they're all doing that, and they really don't care what you're doing. Like, what you're doing is no more important than anybody else. And I find that having kind of made a life, my life in OA, I have to be very careful of that. I have to be very careful that I don't think just because I've been around a while. And that's another thing that I like about Zoom meetings. There's a lot of young people on Zoom meetings, and they're going to be the future. Like, I'm 80 next year. I've had my, I've had the huge benefits of this program, but it is changing. Things are changing. I looked at the finances for 22. The virtual region coughed up a third of our income. This is no, this is here to stay. We love Zoom, and there's a lot of people that find that difficult, and I just hope it won't be something that divides us again. We're very good at that. We've got this book, or we've got that meeting, and or that food plan, to that kind of ability to embrace it and go with it, and not be afraid to let you follow it. Yeah, so it's so lovely to see you all. I'm very attached to all you Americans now. So, and lovely to have you here, Ross. And thank you for supporting that meeting that you do. It's so valuable to have an older member in these meetings. Thank you, everybody. I hope I've given you some help, or something to some opening to cling on to. It seems, to just say, keep coming back, it all seems a bit simple, but honestly, that's all you've got to do. It's all you've got to do. And I honestly don't think I wouldn't even do that. I had to ask God for the desire to stop compulsively overeating, because I didn't want to. I just didn't want to. I didn't want to be fat, but I didn't want to stop compulsive overeating. So everything's a God job. I have to look up all the time. I have to keep my eyes away from that food and just look up. So yeah, thanks everybody for listening and being so.